Welcome to this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. In this episode, we're answering the question, what is the role of genetics and epigenetics in trauma? Joining me is none other than Dr. Bruce Lipton, an internationally recognized leader in bridging science and spirit. And it was his fundamental research in molecular biology at the Stanford University that not only led to his best-selling books, but has strongly influenced the industry in understanding how our body and biology responds to its environment. His best-selling books have included The Biology of Belief, The Honeymoon Effect, and Spontaneous Evolution. And when I met him in person and he and I had a chance to talk about the role of epigenetics and environment and the cell membrane in trauma, I knew that he needed to come and share his insights with you. And so we will be going deep into how our perceptions and how our environment shapes our body's trauma responses. In this episode, you will learn about, do genes or environment determine our cellular behavior? How identical cells, and yet in different environments, and how they perform differently? How positive or negative thoughts alter the chemical composition of our blood? How chronic trauma affects our epigenetics, making us more susceptible to diseases? And even the cause of cancer through the eyes of epigenetics. And finally, practical tools to apply the principles of epigenetics and consciousness to your life to promote an innate state of healing. Let's get started and uncover the role of genetics and epigenetics in trauma. Bruce, one of the most common questions that I get is trauma genetic? And each time I get that, I want to shake my head and say, you have obviously not read any of Dr. Bruce Lipton's books, because it is not about the genes. It's about what controls the genes. It's about how the genes are read. And this is all of your work. And so talk to us about what you have learned about the epigenetics and how that is so much more important than genetics, in especially something around the physiology of having a physiology of fear.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the earlier time when I was teaching at a medical school. And at that time, back about 1980s or so, the conventional understanding at the time was called genetics. And I go, so what does that mean? I said, well, genes control the character of our life. We refer to it as genetic determinism, that genes determine the character. This brings a problem up, and that problem is simply this. As far as we know, did you pick the genes you came with? I go, no, we don't know. If you don't like the characteristics, can you change the genes you came with? No, can't do that. And then, and on top of that, the belief that genes turn on and off by themselves. And I say, well, put those together. I say, what do you have? And I say, you have victim. That we didn't pick them, can't change them. They control us. We don't control them. And that kind of consciousness is spread through our civilization, that we're victims of our heredity, that things are running in our family and inevitably they're going to show up because we got the genes. Well, unfortunately, this is 100% false because I was teaching that too in medical school until I was doing research on stem cells, which are embryonic cells in your body. And what my research revealed is genetically identical cells in different environments, meaning different culture media, had different fates. So I had genetically identical cells, three dishes, all cells were gene identical. They came from a clone. And I changed the culture medium slightly in each dish. And the culture medium is the environment in which cells grow. It's going to come back to us in a second, big time. Okay. So the culture medium is the chemistry fluid in which the cells are living. I create in the lab. I make three slightly different versions of the chemistry. I have three dishes of identically the same genetic cells. Okay. In dish one with culture medium version one, okay, in environment one, the cells form muscle. In the second dish, genetically identical cells, but environment two, slightly different chemistry, the cells form bone. And in dish three, again, slightly different chemistry, and the cells form fat cells. Well, while I've been teaching in the school that genes control life, this experiment completely flattened that idea out because all the cells were genetically the same, but their fate wasn't determined by the genes. Their fate was determined by the culture medium environment, the chemistry of that. So I go, oh, okay, that's really cool. I go, no, here's the picture. We are skin-covered petri dishes. Yep, under my skin, I got 50 trillion cells, and I have the original culture medium because culture medium is a laboratory version of blood. So we have the original culture medium, the original blood. And I go, just to make a difference, if the cell is in a plastic dish or a skin cover dish in regard to responding to this environment, they go, absolutely not. So all of a sudden I say, well, wait a minute, then that means that the composition of my blood is determining my genetics and behavior. I go, yeah. And then I go, well, wait a minute, then who's the chemist? Because that chemistry is going to control my fate. I go, the brain's the chemist. That puts all the chemistry into the blood. And I go, yeah, but what chemicals should the brain put in? And all of a sudden the world changed for me because I realized whatever consciousness, whatever picture I was holding in my head, in my conscious mind, that was being translated into complementary chemistry of that picture. And that chemistry then goes through my skin-covered Petri dish and adjusts the genetics. So the genes were not controlled by themselves. They were controlled by the culture environment, the blood in my body, and the chemistry of my blood controls my genetics. And then I find out, but it's my consciousness that determined what the chemistry of that blood was going to be. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, consciousness is creating my biology and my behavior. And very interesting. So just a little sidebar here. Quantum physics is the most valid of the sciences on this planet. And the significance of it is that the primary principle in quantum physics is consciousness is creating our life experience. Well, that's a physics composition, understanding how consciousness interacts with the environment and blah, blah, blah. But now the new science, which I just described, where the blood controls the fate of the cells, that's called epigenetics. And I go, well, it sounds like genetics. I go, yeah, genetics was the story, victim, genes control me, I don't control them. Epigenetics says the environment is controlling those genes, the environment controlled by my consciousness. Then all of a sudden, wait, if I change my consciousness, I change my blood chemistry, which then adjusts my biology. And all of a sudden I said, oh, then I'm not a victim. I am a creator of my genetic activity. And this creation is coming from my consciousness and going down. Epi means above. So all of our medically oriented people have recognized, and most people on the street recognize, what do we call skin? Epidermis. I said, what does that mean? Well, epi means above. So epidermis means above the dermis. Yeah, underneath the layer of skin is a layer called dermis. I go, yeah, above. So I say, what is epigenetics? I say, control above the genes. This is the science I saw in the Petri dish. This is the science that says, as I change my consciousness, I change my genetic activity. And all of a sudden I said, well, then what's the point? I said, well, what are you focusing on? Where's your consciousness focus at this point? Because if you change the focus of that consciousness, then you change the chemistry of your biology, which then in turn changes and controls your genetics. Well, I want to start off at something that's profoundly important that people just don't talk about, but boy, is it a good time to talk about it right now. And that is this. It's something called the biological imperative. The biological imperative is a biological recognition that organisms have a drive to survive. Every organism on this planet has the biological imperative, which then makes it very difficult to say, then where the hell is this biological imperative? Because bacteria have a biological imperative. You try to kill a bacterium, it's not going to go, oh, okay, kill me. It's going to do everything it can to stay alive. So I said, there's a drive, even from bacteria, to stay alive. I go, oh, this is really important. I go, this is underlying our whole psychology. And I said, what do you mean? I said, you don't realize that, but when you go out on the street and you start looking around, you don't realize the brain has a biological imperative working. And that biological imperative is to make you safe. And if you're not safe, then the biological imperative is going to engage behavior to help you become safe. And I go, the issue about the biological imperative is, only humans are the only organism that know they're going to die. No other organism knows that. And since the drive to survive is to survive and not die, then the whole biology, once we become aware that we can die, our whole biology is directed to surviving. And therefore, our mind is always assessing the environment to see, are we surviving and where the threats are coming from? Why? Because I need to keep adjusting my biology to keep that thing running. I say, so what about trauma? Well, trauma, by definition, is a threat to survival. And as a threat to survival, trauma is going to activate this whole biological imperative mechanism to get your body ready to deal with trauma. I go, oh, well, how does this all come about? And I say, what's going on? Well, this is very important, and that is this. The biology has two phases that are mutually exclusive, meaning they can't go on at the same time. I say, what are these? I say, growth and protection. I say, why? Because they're mutually exclusive behaviors. Growth is go to a stimulus and take it in, whether it's food or love or whatever it is that enhances your vitality. You are open, you go to the stimulus, and you incorporate it. Growth. I say, what about protection? I go, oh, no, protection is a threat. Wall yourself off and go away from the stimulus. I go, so what's the point? I say, growth is open, protection is closed. You can't be both of them at the same time. Growth is go to the stimulus. Protection is go away from the stimulus. You can't go to and away at the same time. Point. When the threats override our lives, we compromise it by compromising growth. We get into a protection mode. Anything that affected us in the past, any kind of trauma that affected us in the past, we are especially programmed to be careful of. Now, what's interesting about it is this. When we have a trauma, let's give a simple example. A man in a shop is working on a saw, and he pushes the saw through, cuts off his thumb. You've got some trauma here. The instant that trauma occurred, the system took a photograph, in a sense, of every sense input coming at the same time. The smell of the wood being cut, the temperature, what was going on, the sound of the saw, the feeling of the cut, all these things. It's like a photograph in memory. The point is, now that there's a memory, said that was threatening. That is like a little card with, you know, punched out, like, okay, smell, taste, vision, sound, all that. If we ever get into an environment where any number of those get hit simultaneously, it will immediately call up that response to protect yourself. So the guy cuts his thumb off, and then months later, he's walking by in the shop and someone has the saw going on. And guess what? He hears the saw, smells the wood. Guess what? Immediately, he's in protection because the card that was punched out of the threat, a number of those just got hit. And if they get hit, then the entire behavior is now put into protection. This is the cause of all problems in the world, because everyone thinks, oh, health issues are all related to genetics. I go, less than 1% of illness is even connected to genetics. 90% is stress. And trauma is a major, major precipitator of stress. And if you start to get into any environment where any of those same signals start to light up, it's going to immediately push you into a stress mode. I say, so what is stress? I said, it's the opposite of growth, number one. I say, how does it work? I say, all goes back to ancient history, because the first stress that human experience was a saber-toothed tiger. Otherwise, hey, what am I going to run away from? The butterflies, the mouse? Nah, I don't really care. Saber-toothed tiger, that's a threat. I say, and what did it engage? It engaged a response of the biological imperative to protect yourself. I say, well, what does that mean? I say, well, you see that tiger chasing you? You got to run like hell. That's part of the, that's built in, unconscious man, run. I go, yeah, but give me the biology. And I go, oh, biology is very important. Why? The energy to run is in the blood, okay? And whatever you need to energize any organ, any system, you need to get the blood to it. So I say, okay, so there's no tiger back there, and I'm just walking along the trail. I say, where's my blood? Well, in no threat situation, the predominance of the blood is in the viscera, the guts. I go, why? Maintenance of the body, cleaning, filtering, energizing, does all the maintenance, does it? And that's why the blood is energizing all these functions. Why? To keep you healthy. The tiger shows up and you've got to run. I say, well, wait a minute. Where do I need the blood? Not in the growth. No, I need it in my arms and legs. So I say, then what happens in the first moment of that stress? I need to get the blood to the arms and legs. And I said, well, the stress hormone squeezes the blood vessels in the gut closed. I said, well, what does that do? I said, well, it keeps the blood from going in the gut, but pushes it to the arms and legs so I could run. I say, so yeah. But then when there's no blood in the gut, then there's no maintenance of the body. I go, not if the tiger is chasing you. I don't need the maintenance now. I need to escape first, maintenance later. So when people start to get stressed, the first thing they feel is butterflies in the stomach, a little queasy. You know, that's the stress hormones causing the blood vessels to squeeze shut. You can feel them fluttering, butterflies, but you feel, okay? So the first thing is the function of the gut is shut down. I go, okay, yeah, but I don't need that. The tiger's chasing me. Second thing, and this is the critical one as well, the immune system uses a lot of energy. Yes, if you've ever been sick, you didn't have enough energy to get out of bed. I said, where'd your energy go? Because the immune system uses a lot. Okay, scenario. You're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, and you have a very profound bacterial infection, bad case of diarrhea looming right now. I say, well, how do you want to split the energy? How much should we use to run away from that tiger, and how much should we use to work on the bacteria? And I go, the hell with the bacteria. If the tiger catches you, that you don't have a problem with them anymore. Point. Stress hormones conserve the energy to run away from the tiger by shutting down the immune system. And I go, this is why when doctors are going to do a transplant, take an organ from person A and put it into person B, they give the recipient of that organ stress hormones before the operation so that the immune system won't be actively rejecting the graft. Okay? So that's how effective stress hormones are, shutting off the immune system so you can put a foreign tissue in the system. Okay. Number three, that when you're in a state of stress like that, thinking is a very slow process. You have two minds, conscious and subconscious. Conscious is creative, wishes, desires, things we like. Subconscious is programs. The significance is this. Thinking is a slow process. If you're running away from a tiger, it's not time to think. It's time to do every action, movement, reflex you can to get out. So the blood vessels in the forebrain thinking are just like the blood vessels in the gut. When the stress hormones come in, it squeezes them shut. So no blood coming to the thinking part, but it's being pushed to the hindbrain where reflexes, reactions are programmed. Okay, no thinking. We have three problems that just occurred. One, we shut down the growth and the maintenance of the body. Two, we shut off the immune system, which protects us from internal threats. And three, we became less intelligent in the process because now we're responding to reaction and not thinking. Okay. Hey, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 years ago, it was just that damn tiger. After you escape from the tiger, 10 minutes of run your ass off, you're away from the tiger. You don't need to be in stress anymore. So you come back into growth. But today's world, stress is 24/7, 365. Biology was never designed for chronic stress. And it turns out up to 90% of the illness on this planet is all tied to chronic stress, which trauma is a major participant in creating. And so the relevance is this. It is a chronic problem of releasing these stress hormones, which debilitate the body and the intelligence of the system. And a lot of people think that this trauma is held inside here in my body, that I got trauma and I'm going to release it. Well, it's experienced that way, but the trauma was in the consciousness. The trauma was a vision that released the chemistry to get the body to be affected by the vision of the trauma. It's sort of like if I sprinkle iron filings, I take an iron and I file it down, make iron dust and put it in a salt shaker, sprinkle it on a piece of paper, I get a random pile of iron filings. Every time I do a random pile, but if I take a magnet and put it underneath that piece of paper, when I sprinkle the iron filings, it's not random anymore. Now I see the beautiful magnetic pattern, the field, the magnetic field. I say, what shaped the iron filings? Was the control in the iron filings? The answer is no. I can shake the iron filings on a piece of paper with no magnet and never does anything but random. So it says, then where did the pattern come from? The field, the magnetic field shaped the iron filings. In our biology, the cells are the iron filings. The mind is the field generator. the mind's fields then organizes the iron filings to complement whatever the field is. And if it's a field of trauma, then the body is going to physiologically accommodate the posture and behavior of protection. Well, protection is shutting it down. I go, yeah, now it's not a saber-tooth tiger. Now it's there all the time. I say, oh, you can't do this. This is why we have a health issue. So the current understanding becomes critical and says that the pattern isn't held in the cells. It's expressed by the cells. But the pattern is held in the consciousness. If we want to change the effect of trauma, then we have to go back and deal with the consciousness of it, not so much the body and give it drugs and chemicals and physical things and try to adjust. I say, this is downstream. Started up here first. This is what quantum physics told us in the first place. Principle number one, consciousness is creating this experience. I go, yeah, and you want to change experience and you change consciousness. And this is what epigenetics says. Consciousness is creating the shaping of this body. So they both agree now. And I say, so what about trauma? And I go, it's a very serious situation because it's one of the primary activators of the biological imperative, which is the protection response. And that if we stay in that protection response, then you can't be open to grow. And you're inhibiting your immune system, which was keeping you healthy. What is the consequence? I say, a breakdown of the system is inevitable. You can't stay in trauma because trauma is going to redirect the cells to be on guard. And it doesn't mean that the trauma had to repeat itself. It just had to believe that the trauma could repeat itself. Didn't have to do it. Yeah. Give you a very simple story. Let's say in a track race, the runners come up and they're what are called starting blocks built in where they put their feet on, push themselves off. And I go, when they get up to the line, they're shaking themselves loose, okay? And the guy that's going to start him has the gun. He says, on your mark. And that's they all get down and they got their feet into those blocks and getting ready. It's like getting ready to go. Get set. And all of a sudden, their muscles are tense and they're now like ready to bolt. And then go. And then boom, they go. And I go, here's the problem. What if you on mark, you get ready because you're preparing. Then you get set because now you feel, uh-oh, it's going to happen now. And then there's no go. The most trained athlete in the world cannot hold get set. They'll collapse right at the starting line. They'll put all that muscle ready to go and like not going anywhere. I go, this is trauma. This is trauma. You're set and you're getting set. You're on your mark, get set and waiting. I said, that's not possible to do physiologically. That's why the runner will collapse. Well, if the runner collapses, then what do you think you're going to do? You're going to collapse as well. And this is the consequence of a trauma. The first part of the trauma is to heal the trauma. The second part, unfortunately, is to heal the vision of the trauma as a continuous life experience. Because if you hold that, then you're going to be in get set, waiting for the repeat of that trauma to come. And you're going to compromise the health and maintenance of the body because trauma is going to get the blood ready for you to get ready to run when that trauma comes. Trauma is going to compromise you because the immune system is getting ready for you to run at that moment. And your intelligence is, what should I do? And I go, well, now it's a bit fuzzy because you're not even operating from that because you're ready to run. And this is where trauma crosses from the consciousness into the biology part. And the cells respond to this because the cells respond to the environment they live in. This is what everyone says, epigenetics responds to the environment. I go, yes, but you left out something. I said, what? The cells in my body do not see the environment. If my world, I need to do something, it's my consciousness that's going to read the world and then send the signals into my body. So it's not the environment directly affecting the genes. It's in between is my consciousness, environment, genes, consciousness. Okay. Well, that's left out of the story for most people because epigenetics, the environment controls this. I go, yeah, the environment does make a big difference, but nobody really emphasizes it's your interpretation of that environment that the cells see. They don't see the real environment. And if you're in a state of trauma, you are continuously showing pictures of a saber-toothed tiger on your tail. I go, and what is the consequence? Well, we already talked about that. 90% of illness is directly due to that. And the trauma is a prolonged chronic experience that perpetuates a self-destruction behavior. Inevitably, it's going to break down. It's going to cause a cancer. It's going to cause a heart attack. It's going to cause diabetes type 2. 100% stress from the environment. That's what it is, 100%. Heart attacks, 90% stress from the environment. Okay? Cancer, there's not one gene that causes cancer. Not one gene. Where the hell did they come from? Well, the cells are like iron filings. The cancer was first a picture in the mind, or a distortion of a picture in the mind that is now manifest in the iron filings called the cells. There's not a gene that does this. Cancer is perpetuated by belief systems and programming. And that's what they find when they looked at adopted children being adopted into families where cancer is running in the lineage. And it turns out the adopted child will get the same family cancer as the rest of the family, even though the adopted child came from totally different genetics. The cancer is a symptom of not living in harmony. It's not a gene. You're not a victim of that. Especially women have to know this quite a lot because they're so programmed to fear the breast cancer gene. Oh my God, that's a breast cancer gene. Angelina Jolie, healthy young woman, double mastectomy. She says, I got it because my mother died of it. My grandmother died. I go, yeah, that's the lineage. Did the gene cause? I go, half the women that have those genes never get the cancer. I go, what does that mean? I say, possession of the gene doesn't cause cancer. Possession of the genes and living in stress causes cancer. It's the stress that initiated it. You can kill all the damn cancer cells you want. If you didn't get rid of the cause, what's the cause? Not a genetic mutation, a conscious deviation. And you can kill the cancer cells, but if you didn't change the consciousness, cancer will come back in some form or other anyway. Why? You know, that was the cause. You're killing the cells. That's the symptom of a cancer. That's the result of a cancer. And we have to get to this. And this is why your program is so important to deal with trauma, because there's a physical aspect. Sure, that hurts. Whatever it is, that's a physical consequence. But there's a long-term learning experience from the biological imperative that recognizes when something's threatening to you, you now have symptoms related to that, whether it's the sound of a saw, the smell of the wood, the guy that got his finger cut off. The moment he walks by that saw, he'll pull his hand in just like that. Why? Memory, trauma, and it comes back. And so the message that I like to give is, I can change my belief system. I can change the vision of the trauma. That's more effective than trying to treat the consequence of the trauma, because the consequence is going to keep going until you get rid of the source. And it wasn't the physical problem. That was the result of the trauma, but the consciousness of it.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. Trauma is the biggest disruptor of movement and growth in our body at a system and cellular level. Isn't it fascinating to see that trauma will actually redirect blood flow away from our gut? Of course, no wonder that digestive issues, sleep, pain, fatigue, gut, and inflammation issues are so prevalent in those whose autonomic nervous system is still holding on to trauma. Our body has been caught in a chronic trauma state. It is not due to our genes that we have these health issues. To support our body, we really want to be supporting our immune system. And vitamin D might be one of the easiest, which means one of the best things that you can start taking. Of all the patients that I have seen with stored trauma, they all had vitamin D levels that were less than optimal. I will have a link for vitamin D in case you want to check that out. As we heard Dr. Lipton say, as long as we believe, just believe that our trauma could repeat, that alone will keep our physiology in a state of danger. And whether that's in the sympathetic state of danger or the trauma collapse state of danger. If you'd like to understand these two competing survival states that are both based on danger but are very different, I will share a guide with you, and I'll have that link in the show notes. It will teach you the difference. It's called the two competing survival states. If you would like other podcast episodes on this topic of epigenetics and trauma, You will want to go find and listen to episodes 5 and 6. These were both with Dr. William Walsh. Episode 5 was on how genetics and epigenetics affect in utero development, actually setting us up for attachment trauma. Episode number 6 was on methylation and epigenetics and mental health outcomes. This was part 2 with Dr. William Walsh, looking at anxiety and depression and the role of methylation and epigenetics in those. Finally, if you could please take a minute to leave a review for the Biology of Trauma podcast. As you know, I am here to bring you practical, valuable information that will help you accelerate your trauma healing journey and do the same for your patients or clients. Your reviews and feedback are how I know how to improve this podcast. And so I ask that you take a minute to review. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. Until next episode, lots of love.